So our good friend Patrick Henry Bass is here in the studio with us. He's senior editor for Essence magazine, and it's fair to say you're in charge of most of the book activity that takes place at Essence too, right?
100% of the book activity.
A published author of in his own right as well, and someone who I think is a heartfelt cheerleader for the beleaguered publishing industry in these days.
I'd say champion.
Champion, yes, indeed. Well, this publishing champion has been to the Book Expo America conference, which opens here in New York at the Javits Center, New York City. And, you know, there's always talk about the problems in publishing and the manifestations of technology and possibly changing the way that we consume books, readership down, that sort of thing. But one place where growth seems to be persistent and thrilling, in fact, is graphic novels.
Correct. There is a silver lining in the publishing industry, and it's happening through this quiet little revolution that's been happening for quite some time, unbeknownst to, you know, people like me.
Well, you, as a mainstream sort of publishing person, come to this really late in the game and really are responding to the fact that, hey, this is a growth area.
Yeah, it just completely snuck up on me. And then once I dove into the world, I'm now addicted to graphic novels. I
mean, even after Mouse won the Pulitzer Prize, this is still surprising?
Even after Mouse. I mean, because the challenge was mainstream publishers weren't doing a good enough job of getting graphic novels out there to critics like me and to the masses. And now they're catching up and they're catching up big time.
But what's the threshold for you? I mean, Mouse seemed, and I can see it on your face, as something like a one-off, a sort of, that's great. Artie Spiegelman's Mouse, a version of the Holocaust using animals as characters. But what's the trigger for you that says, no, actually, this medium is immersive. This is something fundamentally like getting lost in a Dickens novel.
Because now you're beginning to see diversity within graphic novels. And before you saw, you know, graphic novels like V is for Vendetta, which became a movie with Natalie Portman. You saw graphic novels like Cool World, which was also a movie with Scarlett Johansson. The Watchmen. And those movies, Cool World and V is for Vendetta, they were really more for just fans and enthusiasts. So, you know, any average reader didn't feel as if they could come into this world unless they had to have, you know, some type of, you know, lexicon or some understanding, or as if you were a lostie. And what I'm beginning to see, especially with the selections that I have, is anyone can come into the world of graphic novels.
Well, and a lot of people have come into the world of graphic novels from the gaming industry, where sort of motion graphics in a comic book style telling stories really comes directly from video games. There's a technological dimension to this. I was talking to a cartoonist friend of mine recently who said that, you know, he's not excited by the iPad, all right? He always dreamed that there was a device to put his artwork on, even when he was doing mainstream, regular old paper, ink, and pen comics, that all cartoonists, he believes, have dreamed of this pad where you can, like, go around, blow the thing up, hang out in the images, that sort of thing.
What's fascinating is I think that the iPad and e-readers and graphic novels may be the next wave in publishing. There's now Crude Behavior, which started out in the Boston Globe. It's a serialized satire of political behavior and misbehavior. And that is now available on the Kindle. There are all types of, you know, discussions of apps and PDFs and, you know, stuff that's way over my head. I just want a good book
to
read.
Well, that's the technology coming up. They say that cave art was the very first graphic novels. Mm-hmm. Cave paintings.
Yes, wow, gosh. And panels even,
yeah,
right?
Tapestries.
Yeah, so those apps are a little challenging.
I have some graphic novels here that I think that are worth everyone checking out. The first one is Black Blizzard by Yoshihiro Tatsumi, who this book is just out. This graphic novel is just out. He is the godfather of manga, which means graphic novel. And this graphic novel was actually written in 1950. It's Dostoevsky-esque in its themes. And he does cinematic, huge, bold work. So it's almost like Hitchcockian when you look at it. It's about two guys in North Japan who, you know, one is accused of a crime. They end up on a train together, and then you let the story rip. I mean, if the listeners can get a chance to look at that, it's an incredible.
And again, you know, the artwork is linked on our website. But, you know, the Japanese graphic novels typically evoke social issues that are very, very controversial within the narrative in ways that actually Japanese wouldn't necessarily bring up in politics or in regular discourse.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that makes it compelling, because it looks at crime. You know, you seldom think about Japanese culture really not only embracing crime, but really discussing crime. Another book that I was quite moved by, the graphic novel, is one by Peter Baggy, who is a disciple of R. Crumb. So his book, Other Lives, if you took Naked Lunch and you took R. Crumb and you put them all together, you have Other Lives. And it's,
uh-oh.
Yeah.
Well, you can see that.
With a little bit of Robert Ludlum. So it's like, you know, the CIA, it's you know, a little drug culture. It's phenomenal.
It's very much a narrative, and you can see it in the art here. Peter Baggy is, you know, creating a portrait of a subculture, of a world of people on the fringe, which is very much R. Crumb.
Right now, and young girls are coming into graphic novels. You know, Cool World and also V is for Vendetta brought young girls into graphic novels. And Laurie Sandell, who is a women's magazine writer primarily, decided to use the graphic novel for her first memoir, which is The Imposter's Daughter. Incredible true story. Her father completely fabricated whole lies and whole life. He pretended that he, you know, was this stockbroker, that he was a world traveler. And she looked back on her father's life and realized that he was a complete liar. And instead of doing the traditional memoir like Liar's Club, she illustrated her own memoir into the imposter's daughter. And what's great about that is it's funny. It looks like Kathy Geiswipe, but there's some real emotional touchstones in it. And I thought that was a very brave choice to publish the memoir in that format.
Well, bravery, and also, I mean, bravery just because, you know, this is her first venture into doing this kind of art. But does the art detract from the emotional content of, say, a Mary Carr, Liar's Club kind of
Well, they're two different
memoir.
Stories, but I think that Laurie Sandell's narrative really lent itself to the graphic novel format. When you think about some of these memoirs, you know, Prozac Nation could have easily been a graphic novel.
Interesting.
You know,
yeah. Elizabeth
sure Brooks, there are a lot of memoirs,
you know,
of them coming out.
And in that way, because it's so, you know, such a fabulous creation that her father sort of spun in terms of his life story. I thought that Laurie Sandell kind of honored that in that way through the graphic novel format, because it's not her story, it's his story.
Your last title takes us directly into the headlines, or certainly contemporary history.
Yeah, that is AD, After the Deluge, by Josh Neufeld, which actually started online. We're coming up on the 5th anniversary of Katrina. A lot of people are checking out Tremé on HBO, and Josh Neufeld sort of got there first. This is a truly Dickensian. It follows seven lives of seven actual people who went through the horror and tragedy that was Katrina.
Have you checked these out only in regular published paper form, or have you also checked them out on some of the other technological platforms?
I first checked them out on paper. I came into this through The Imposter's Daughter by Laurie Sandell, so I started to read it, and I was like, okay, are there other things like there out are there other books like graphic novels out there like this one? Because I still like the tactile experience of just diving into a book cover, white and black words, and
old
sort of
fashioned, calling
it a day. Yeah.
Old-fashioned
I know, I know. I'm still in the 19th century. I hadn't moved on yet.
You going back to the Book Expo today?
Tragically, yes, I will.
Well, you can see images and covers from the books Patrick saw at the Book Expo, and we'll get some pictures of Patrick actually on the scene there at the Javits Center. Go to thetakeaway.org, and if you're a big graphic novel fan, give us some recommendations that you have and why. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
I've put a couple of my recommendations up on the web, although really I could take up the whole website.
Yep.
With some really good recommendations on good graphic novels.
I'm a Chris Ware fan myself.
Are you?
Yep.
Well, there was The Lion, the Pride, about the lion pride out of Baghdad, that zoo. That was a great one. And there's really, really phenomenal, very topical graphic novels out there. But you can let us know about anything that captures your interest on the show at 877-8-MY-TAKE or at thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks for coming in, Patrick.
Yes.
This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.